Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of One of These Years. Original cast, or the current cast, whatever you want to call it. Not, I guess, original cast. Current cast. I'm, of course, Nick Baumgartner, along with Colton Pouncey. Back from wrist surgery, part two, or whatever it's been. The last stage, I'll say. It was only, as I told Colton before we got on, just a quick removal of a bar. So we're all set there. So thanks to Chris Burke, as always, for last week. And Colton, back from Tampa. How are we doing?
Good. Tampa was fun. Fun trip. I was telling Nick this before we recorded, but some of my friends from high school, closest friends, usually pick at least one
that is awesome
road trip to tag along to every year. And last year we did Dallas. This year we did Tampa. So got in a little early and got to, you know, kind of explore a little bit. And fun trip overall, but gonna miss the warm weather.
Did you go to Ybor City at all?
That's the one spot we didn't.
You didn't. Really make it okay, to. Good. That means you're maturing then as a
is it?
As okay. An adult. Yeah, Ybor City is like the wild and craziest part of Tampa. Like whenever I would go there, I've been there so many times, I can't even. Whenever I would go there for bowl games, right? The student paper would always be there too, which for both schools usually, and those students would always go to Ybor City, and they were only usually there for like New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, so they would go New Year's Eve in Ybor City, and then you'd have the noon kickoff or whatever in the stupid Outback Bowl, wherever it was, and then those kids would always look like they were. Max was probably one of them. Were always looking like they were about to die because it was like, oh god, you guys were out in Ybor City. But I remember plenty of Tampa's an interesting town.
Ybor was recommended to us by quite a few locals, but did not make our way over. We had it was fun. Like we got in, and then we hit the aquarium. That was cool.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that was fun.
We did one of those like. We saw someone doing like those like cartoon caricatures where they make you look crazy.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I've never done one of those before. Well, so me and like three of my friends just sat there for like 30 minutes, like getting our faces drawn. Did like a little tiki bar boat. That was cool.
Right.
And yeah, hit some spots later on. So it was fun.
That's awesome. And then, of course, the Lions finish it off with a pretty dominating victory over the Bucks. And I mean, you know, Colton, again, this. You guys, last week, you and Chris talked a lot about Jared Goff, and I told you before we got on the show, we're going to probably talk about him again because it was a terrific game by him. But before we get into the specifics of Goff, you know, to me, I look at this game as another example. Again, the Atlanta game was like this. It's like three straight weeks probably of this where it's like this is exactly how you wanted a game to play out. They didn't rush anything. We talked a lot about that after the Seattle game, right? Can't be doing the jump ahead stuff. Just play the game. Let it come to you, and man alive, that's what they've been doing, and it's like, you can see now, right, why they're hard to play, why they're hard to get on top of, and, you know, unless you're a good team, you're up against it, right, against the Lions. They're in a really good spot. I mean, I know that all the hype and everybody's going nuts, but Colton, people ask me every day, is this real? I mean, they're a good football team. I want to start with that this week. This is a good team, right? Like, by all measurements that we have, our eyes and our metrics and comparing them to their peers. Good football team. No other way to say it.
No other way to say it, man. It's like, I think I tweeted this after the game. They're running out of ways to convince the NFL that they're a good football team.
Right. Like, yeah, exactly.
At some point, you just are a good football team. And the Lions, I think they're starting to get that respect. I was watching First Take for like the first time in forever week. I don't even know why I turned it on, but, you know, it was on. And I'm watching Stephen A. do his like power rankings. And he had, you know, one by one, it was like Chiefs in here, you know, Dolphins in there, you know, Eagles and 49ers. And then I'm watching it. I'm like, wait a minute. He's on number two, and the Lions haven't been, like, mentioned yet. He had him at number one.
Oh, wow. He had him one.
He had him at number one. So, like, they're starting to get, like, the national respect, and the way they did that is by winning convincingly. I know it's early, but, you know, they're winning a lot of these games by double digits now. Like, they're not really within reach by the fourth quarter.
Exactly.
Like, it never feels like, oh, I don't know, this team might sneak back in. I don't know, like, how's this going to go? You know, maybe it could be close. It's not close in the fourth quarter. So, you know, I think the way they're winning, the brand of football they're playing on both sides, the offense is getting it done, defense is getting stops and getting off the field. They're creating turnovers. Like, I'm watching this team. I'm like, this is a complete squad on both sides.
Right.
And that's, you know, the top 10 in offense, top 10 in defense. That's usually a sign of a team that can go pretty far in the postseason. So, I mean, again, they're running out of ways to convince the NFL world they're a good team. I think they just are at this point.
I mean, that's exactly what you exactly right. It's a complete squad with depth, and it tells us, you know, for both of us that our eyes didn't fail us or lie to us in the summer when we went out there and said, like, there is real depth here. You know, they're going to
thank God.
Right, of course, right? We would have been never hearing the end of that. But I mean, it was obvious. It was like undeniable from the day you walked out there, just the competitive level of every drill and every little thing they were doing was so clear. And it's like, yeah, they were going to have to cut, and they did cut players that were good enough to make other teams 53, and there's more on their practice squad probably that were in that situation, and that I think has surprised people because they've had injuries. They've had more than one, right? It hasn't been the healthiest of runs here. They've had some significant injuries, okay?
Yes.
Like, not nothing. Like, C.J. Gardner-Johnson goes down in week two, for God's sake, like the second play or whatever it was. Of the home opener, like they've had a lot of bad luck in some of that, in some of those, and it hasn't mattered. It has not mattered, and it's like that's the thing to take away. What were you going to say?
I actually wrote down a list of like starters or key reserves that have missed time at least one game this year.
How many you got?
I've got David Montgomery, Jahmyr Gibbs, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jameson Williams, Taylor Decker, Jonah Jackson, Vitae, Josh Pascal, James Houston, Brian Branch, Emmanuel Mosley, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, Kirby Joseph.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's terrible injury luck. And like, as, you know, and as I was on with our buddy Graham Couch, friend of the show, the other day, and his theory, of course, is you get those injuries out of the way early so they come back later in the year, and then you're just a playoff team when it's ready to go. Like, you know, hey, that's how it works out. But again, like, if that had happened, you know, and hey, look, last year they did have a rash of injuries early, as you'll recall, and it didn't go well. And the year before, it not as bad, but they had some, and it went even worse. Like, they didn't have the whatever to sustain it, and it's not just they didn't have the depth to sustain it, because, of course, there's depth, and we've talked about that ad nauseum, but they didn't have the guy we're going to start talking about here is Goff. They didn't have, like, the big play. You got guys on defense now that are making big plays. You got guys on offense now that are making big plays and expecting to do it, and it's like, you know, dare I call them star-level players in the NFL, or at least plus-level starters. They just didn't have many of those. And now when you look out there on both sides of the ball, and I want to start with Goff, like I said, you know, Colton, when I looked back at the numbers, I couldn't find more than maybe two games in his entire career that were better in terms of, you know, both vertical efficiency and, you know, just everything in terms of the, you know, volume. I think he had 40 attempts, whatever it was, 40 dropbacks. Your thoughts on Goff? Because, I mean, to me, that, I don't know what you guys' number you landed on last week for his extension was, but it might be going up because that was a hell of a performance. And if it continues, man, this is a different conversation.
Yeah, price went up, as I say.
Yeah, price is going up, guys. Okay?
Price is going up. Yeah, man, like when David Montgomery goes down in that game, it's still close. And I think it was like maybe close to halftime, maybe a few minutes before halftime. And you're just kind of like, all right, yeah, this game's going to have to be won by Jared Goff because, you know, Craig Reynolds' block was awesome, but, you know, they kind of struggled to run the ball. Tampa has a good rushing defense. No Jahmyr Gibbs either, so you're kind of shorthanded at running back. And when you're on your RB3, you don't really feel good about being able to run the ball, especially against a front seven like that. So they were going to have to win it with the arm of Jared Goff, and he did it. He did it. It was insane. He was 30 of 44, 353, two touchdowns. Just surgical, though, like the way that he was getting the ball out to his playmakers. He's getting it done on third and long situations. He's just carving up the defense. And every time they needed a big throw from him, he delivered. So I'm watching that game. I'm just like, this is a different Jared Goff. Yep. Like even last year when he was playing well, he's taken another level. He's taken another step. Like the quarterback we're watching right now is, I think, a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. Now, people are going to have issues with me saying I'm watching with my own eyes, and I'm saying he's hitting these tight window throws. He's carving up defenses. He's doing this week in and week out. He's done this for like a year and a half now. I don't know how much more evidence you need that Jared Goff is a pretty good quarterback in this league. He's producing like a top 10 quarterback. So that's what matters to me. Might not have the arm talent of some other guys, but he's getting it done in this offense that he's perfectly crafted for, and this looks sustainable to me. So that's where I'm at with Jared Goff.
I know.
He's in the MVP conversation right now, and I think that's well-deserved just with the way he's played this year. So really impressed with what he did in that Tampa game and overall this season.
I'm going to be really interested to read Sean McVay's book and then Jared Goff's rebuttal of his book whenever that comes out, right, of how that marriage ended. Because, like, when it did end, right, because this is the first game that I thought everything came together for him. Because when he got tossed aside by the Rams and they made the trade, he was out of confidence. We've talked about this. And the biggest thing that everybody talked about at the time was, you know, no longer is this the guy that's so comfortable just taking shots down the field. You remember that kid the first or second year, that Chiefs game that everybody talks about with the Rams, where he's just slinging the ball and, like, you know, unconscious, like, you know, taking shot for shot. So that goes away, and everybody focused so much on that. And the first year of Detroit, it was the same thing. It was like, this guy's got no confidence to throw the ball down the field. And then last year, you know, as we saw, as the year went on, it started to happen. And like you said, Colton, you could see that part of it building. The other piece that has now come along with it is the sort of general maturation of a quarterback, and now he's a veteran who's getting the ball out quick, who understands everything they're doing, who has a hand in building the game plan every week. I mean, like, his rapport with Johnson is as good as any starter's rapport that anyone in the NFL has with their OC. This is like the full package now. This is what you're getting. This is what, you know, when the Rams drafted number one overall, they were hoping they'd have at 29 or however old, you know, whatever age he is at this point. I don't think he's 29. But, like, that's sort of the point here, is that he got the confidence back last year, and that has sort of allowed him to slow the game down the way it should be slowed down, and now he just sees it like a veteran who's played all these games, and he's tough to rattle. And like you said, like, he was making throws that were just replacing the run game, which, if they can do that, holy shit, man. Like, if you can take the run game away and he can just replace it with 7-yard, you know, like, you're not beating them. It's going to be really hard to beat them. You're going to have to score 50. You know what I mean? Like, that's the result.
Yeah, I think when you mention, like, the total package, it's him being with a coaching staff that he's comfortable with, that he doesn't feel like he's, you know, walking on eggshells around.
Right.
That's a huge part of Goff's game and what brings out the best in it. I think you have to look at the weapons and the supporting cast. He's got an offensive line that keeps him upright. You know, he's got his number one go-to receiver in Amara St. Brown. A tight end, Sam Laporta, that he trusts already as a rookie. He's starting to hit J-Mo on some of these deep passes, which we can talk about later. He's got, you know, Josh Reynolds, a guy that was with him in L.A. and now here in Detroit that he trusts. So he's got weapons around him that he, you know, that he does trust. And then, you know, something that Tanner Engstrand talked about the other day is that he's processing at a much faster rate than he was in the past. And I think that's, one, you know, a testament to, you know, how he's grown as a quarterback, the maturity over the years. Like, that comes later in life and later in your career. But, man, like, he is just so locked in the system that he's seeing everything. It's year two with Ben Johnson, and, like, you're looking around, and he's, you know, first read, second read, boom. You know, he's getting the ball out as soon as possible to the guys that he needs to, and he's hitting the right reads and making the right reads. So, yeah, you look at the total package. Like, Goff is playing like a top 10 quarterback
in
the NFL.
I agree completely really talk about that. With that whole thing, because – if you look at this, like, his yards per attempt is not as high as it was, but it's getting there. In his best days with the Rams, it's getting close to it. However, to me, that doesn't really matter. His, like, he's getting the ball out faster than, like, just about. I mean, it's not to a level, but it's not that far off. He's, like, one of the few guys that's, like, up there in terms of, like, and Tua is the one guy in the NFL right now where you look around and you say, there's no one in the NFL right now playing quarterback, probably, I would, unless I'm just going to skip over somebody at the top of my head here, there's really not, that's in more tune with what their offense and play caller wants them to do than Tua, right? Like, they're like, they have one brain, it feels like sometimes, right? Almost in some ways.
Yeah.
Mahomes, of course, is the exception in some ways. But I guess Goff is, like, in that conversation to me right now, because you watch him, and you could probably look at the numbers. I haven't seen the time number on the seconds or whatever, but, like, the ball's out fast. There's no waiting, and there's no, like, automatic checkdowns. The ball's out fast, and it's going down the field and vertically. It's been impossible not to see. It's like, yeah, he finally got the confidence back, and now he's growing as a player. And it's like, yeah, that's why I want to read Sean McVay's book someday, to be like, you won a Super Bowl, so the trade was certainly worth it. But also, like, you kind of lost your mind after you won the Super Bowl. You probably didn't need to give up on Goff. Like, you probably kind of ruined that. Like, that wasn't maybe necessary. So that's interesting. What did you guys last week? I didn't listen to the whole show. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. I'll ask you this after that.
I was going to say, off of the McVay thoughts, I was on the Athletic Football Show earlier this week with Zach Kiefer, where he kind of just goes around different beat writers and checks in with them.
Right.
And I was listening back to the episode to hear Jordan Rodrigue. She was talking about kind of McVay and the Rams.
Yeah.
And she was kind of talking about how nurturing that McVay's kind of been in recent years. Maybe that's
I'm
a
sure.
shift than what he was earlier.
Absolutely.
And, like, he's got these young players and a young team that he's trying to, like,
yes.
bring along. And I'm listening, and I'm like, damn, Jared Goff probably could have used that back in the day, huh?
Oh, I bet he changed. I bet Sean McVay learned a lot from that one. Yeah, I don't know if he'll ever admit it.
I think
it,
he did.
But, yeah,
no, I don't think so, but I think he did. I agree.
Yeah, because I remember we talked to Jordan at the Combine, and she said some of that, too, with, like, you can tell he's a different person now, you know? And it's like, I wonder how much of that played a factor in it, right? Because it's had to have.
Yeah.
Had to have. Yeah. But, yeah, what did you guys end up last week when you guys talked about the extension? What did Chris think? I didn't listen to the whole show. What did he think on in terms of... Because something has to happen. I think we can all agree on that point. Like, you know, the starting point of, like, they got to sign him to something. It'd be stupid not to for a number of reasons. But what was your all's thought there?
I think we landed on more than Daniel Jones.
More than Daniel
Jones? That's a floor. Because he got, what, 4 years, 160?
160, yeah.
We're pondering different ways to get it done. Like, maybe you go... you know, shorter years and, you know, you tack on some higher AAV. But maybe they do go 4 years and it looks something like, I don't know, 180, something like that. I don't know how far you go, but
I don't know either. I think I would try to push for three and do like the Geno thing and just load it up for 3 years and be like, whatever. And then we'll redo what we got to do. And if he wants to do like the safety net void year or whatever, fine. But there are ways you could load it and play with it. But I think, too, Colton, I would say this. Let me ask you this. Do the Lions go to him and say, how much do you value playing here and winning with us? And Dan.
Yeah.
And, you know, because Jared's already had a giant deal, right?
Yes.
Well, he already had one that was massive, like a record contract.
He has been paid well.
He's been paid huge here already. You know, like, I mean, I'm very curious to see how this goes, because it's not impossible that the market says, hey, you're worth more than what they're going to give you. You know what I mean? It's
so
very welcome.
That was another thing we talked about. And, you know, I think my takeaway from that episode was that I actually think the Lions have more leverage than people think.
Do you?
In this scenario.
Interesting.
I do. Because some of the things you just mentioned, we talked about last week, it's like, all right, Jared, you were already dumped by another team that didn't think that you were good enough to win with.
That's true.
There was this perception about you that, you know, some people were ready to call him like a career backup after he got
done.
Dumped
bridge
by the
best.
Rams.
Yep,
a bridge at best. You know, an Andy Dalton type probably, you know, like, which is crazy because he was still like, I don't know, 26, 27 when he got to the Lions. But, you know, I think just what the Lions have done for him, like resurrecting his career, like, you know, with Ben Johnson tailoring the offense for him, surrounding him with weapons, I think it's like you've got a good thing going here in Detroit.
Yeah.
And You can leave if you want, but how many situations are going to be better for you than what we have in Detroit right now?
Right.
And so if you want to stay here, maybe it's a conversation of, hey, man, we want you here, but it has to be on our terms so we can continue, you know, building this roster around you. You know, if we're not able to pay like Sewell or Hutchinson or St. Brown and all these other guys,
right?
Maybe you're not as effective. Maybe our team isn't as good, you know, from top to bottom. We got to keep our guys in place. And you're one of our guys, but we have to make it work for everyone. So maybe that's the conversation they have. And that's something that Jared, who has already earned a big money contract in his career, mm-hmm. and is still going to get paid, you know, 40
yeah,
plus
right,
million.
A lot, yeah.
Maybe that's something that he's comfortable with and is like, you know what, I agree. Like, I'll take a little pay cut, maybe a hometown discount, and, you know, come back and we'll re-sign our guys and keep this thing moving. So yeah. maybe that's the conversation, but actually my takeaway is that I think the Lions have a little bit more leverage than people think, but, you know, if Goff keeps playing like this, you know, he's going to come
pretty
big contract regardless.
You never know, and that's very true and fair, but it's always the thing I go back to where it's like there's just not that many guys who can do it, you know, and every year teams are just – on the verge of being like, this guy sucks, we got to start over. All of them. Like, it happens so much more than people want to admit or talk to themselves. So you never know with that sort of thing. But okay, moving on. Offensively, you mentioned the run game didn't really get much that, you know, status update, I suppose, here before we go forward on Montgomery. What's the situation with him? Is it was a bit of a slog. Tampa's, of course, very tough inside and everywhere on defense in general. Todd Bowles is a really good coach. But what's the status there?
Yeah, I mean, that was going to be a tough one to kind of run the ball on anyway, just that defense. But not a ton of success. They had 40 yards on 22 carries, and Montgomery left in the second quarter. So that was sort of the big update there. He's dealing with a rib injury. I think Campbell mentioned it's like a cartilage issue, and that's not an easy thing to come back from, especially from a running back when you're taking hits repeatedly.
Yeah.
So it sounds like he's not going to play this week. He hasn't practiced yet as of, you know, Wednesday and Thursday. I guess we'll see tomorrow, but it doesn't sound like he's going to be able to go this week. This is my early read.
Mm-hmm.
Now the question is, because they've got the Ravens this week, next week they've got Monday Night Football against the Raiders, and then the week after that is their bye. So if you want to give him a few weeks, maybe you just sit him for the Ravens game, sit him for the Raiders. You got the bye week, and then he comes back the next week against the Chargers.
Yeah,
and that's a game you'll probably need him for. So maybe that's how they go if they just want to give him as much time as possible to heal. But it doesn't sound like at the very least he's going to be able to go this week. Jahmyr Gibbs, meanwhile, is looking good for this week. You know, Campbell said earlier this week he was trending in the right direction. He's practiced the last couple of days. You know, I saw him out there. He looked fine. He was running around. So I think they'll get Gibbs back this week, which is great news. And Craig was even on the injury report. Which is not great. You're looking around. You're like, they got three of the running backs on the roster all in the injury report, so that's not great. But Craig was back at practice on Thursday, so, you know, if that's a sign, you'll probably have Gibbs and Craig at the very least, and maybe you bring up, you know, Ozigbo. They've got Mo Ibrahim is back in the building.
Oh, is he?
So,
interesting.
Yeah, I imagine they'll bring one of those guys up. But for now, yep, that's the running game, running situation, and work in progress, but they're getting there.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting because this is a tough, you know, Baltimore is always a challenge in that department anyway, even if you're healthy. But, you know, whatever. Like, Tampa's good. Like, that was a good defense.
Damn good defense.
You know what I mean? That's why they, what are they, 3-3? I don't know what the record is now, but, like, the only reason they've won anything is because of their defense. I mean, those linebackers are ridiculous. They have players everywhere. Like that, you know, every guy that makes a tackle, you look up, you're like, well, that was a top 100 player coming out of college, you know, whatever it is. So, like, I don't, I mean, like, they figured it out here. I don't want to sit here and say that that's something that can't be solved. Limited Gibbs, limited Reynolds maybe doesn't bode as well, but I guess, I don't know. That's going to be interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, if they can get this one without those guys.
Yeah, right.
Like,
I mean, Baltimore did not look great last week and by any stretch, but, you know, that was in London.
That defense is insane. I think they lead the NFL in sacks. Like, Roquan and those boys are different.
Right.
Lamar, we've talked about the Lions' issues with mobile quarterbacks, so this will be an interesting one going against Lamar. But, man, like, if they can get this one done on the road.
I know. That's a big deal. And I think the silver lining would be I'd rather have, if I had to pick one, I'd rather be without the running back than I would be without a lineman in this game.
Yeah.
Especially this game because of the front.
Right.
In that case, you're okay there. Let's talk about Jameson, though, before we move on to anything defensively. Jameson, of course, has the big touchdown catch and also has one where they didn't quite link up. People can debate all day. I'm sure they have whose fault that was and whatever. It doesn't matter. The point that I took away from the whole thing was, Colton, that Jared Goff went right back to him. Like, a couple plays, I don't know if it was a drive late or whatever it was, goes right back to him and makes just like a reaction throw, pressure in his face. I see him beating him deep. We're going to take the shot. And it looked weird, but they got it done. And like, to me, that has to be a big step in some direction, right? Like, it's not nothing. It's a big deal to some degree, to a probably a large-ish degree, I would think, that yeah. finally lands.
That was awesome to see, I think. One, so like, the JMO did have a drop. It was kind of a tough play. Like, Jared Goff was getting pressured a little bit, so he had to kind of get rid of the ball a little earlier.
Right.
The route that JMO ran, though, was nasty. The separation he created.
Yeah, man.
I want everyone to go back and, like, watch that play because he dusted his man. Like, he was – if Goff isn't pressured on that play and gets the ball out cleanly to him on that hitch
right,
or
whatever, he's got room, yeah.
Like, he's taking that for a touchdown. Like, there's no one around him, and he's faster than everyone on the field. So that's an easy touchdown if they actually connect on that. And, you know, yeah, he dropped it. He probably could have worked back a little bit. But, you know, again – tough play. Goff is getting pressured, so you let that one slide. The bigger thing to me was, like you mentioned, Goff going right back to JMO. I think it was two plays later. I think the play in between, LaPorta dropped a pass, so
yeah, right.
Young guys aren't really like making plays for him, and then Goff's like, you know what? I'm going to rip it. I'm gonna sit here. I see JMO downfield. I'm going to get this pass off.
Yeah.
Didn't come out like super clean out of his hands, but it didn't really matter because the adjustment that JMO made when that ball was in the air was just – so incredible, incredibly impressive. The fact that he was able to hold on to it as like a defender is trying to stick a hand in there and jar it loose, like he held on to it. And that I remember the ball felt like it was in the air for like 20 seconds. And you're in the press box, you're just like, this is a make or break play right now. Like if he drops this.
Yeah, right. It really was. Like, yeah.
He's never going to hear the end of it. If he catches it, you know, that could be something special. Maybe the start of getting him on the right track. And he comes down with it and rolls to the end zone and kind of throws the ball and does his little parade as he does around the stadium.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, you're like, all right, JMO's back. This is what he can do for an offense against the defense. And there are even other times where he wasn't maybe targeted, but he's still, you know, creating stuff for others underneath with St. Brown and LaPorta. So like, again, if you don't think that JMO can make an impact on the offense, then you're just, like, not watching these games because he's out there and his speed is literally game-changing. Like, that play was a game-changing play.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know what to tell people, but, like, this is what they envision. I know he's not getting the targets right now, but I think that he's in the right direction. Those will come with time. And, you know, in the meantime, he can still be productive for this offense.
There are two plays in that game, and they're pretty much back-to-back. It's at the touchdown and then I think on the next drive that – completely illustrate everything they want from him as a player in the offense, and that the one is the touchdown pass where they're just running a flood and he's the vertical option on the flood, which isn't the first option on that throw. It's, you know, almost an alert usually in that case. But if he beats his guy, as he did in that coverage, is cover three, the guy was way too low, he couldn't beat him on the back, Goff just takes the shot. Like, that's what he's there to do, one. And then two, they come back on, I want to say it was the next drive, and they run the big dagger with St. Brown, and JMO takes two guys right up the middle, 55, 60 yards down the field, and there's like 20 yards of space for St. Brown, who doesn't need any space, by the way, for him to crack back into on the inbreaker. So, I mean, like, that's exactly what he's – and we've seen the blocking, but the space that can be created if you have to pay attention to this guy, and Tampa did because – he caught a touchdown, and right away after, I'm sure they go to the sideline like, well, shit, we gotta pay attention, you know. So that is, for a team that runs the ball and works underneath as much as they do, my God. Like, you saw what St. Brown and Reynolds were able to do without any help over the top. Like, that's, in LaPorta, that's, you're now getting the idea. Now, I hear this every day. Well, it was a bad draft pick. It was a terrible pick. Blah, blah, blah. We'll see on all these picks. But the logic behind it is never really been in question. You want a guy that can just burn the top off of everything because you do so much in the intermediate that kills people, that if you can create more space in there, obviously you want to, you know, whatever about where you take a guy like that, but the role and the fit, it's pretty obvious. And anyone who doesn't see that is really not watching. Now, the question is can he do it, you know, each week? You know, it's just going to continue to happen where every deep ball is a little awkward because we're not on the same page in terms of whether that ball was thrown to the pylon properly, or did he turn the wrong way, or did he not locate it fast enough? I have no idea. But, like, you know, as things go forward, like you said, more reps, more everything else. that'll be the big test of if it smooths out.
Yeah, Goff did say it just came out of his hands a little fluky. So,
oh, yeah, okay, so there you go.
I think that's what it was. But I agree, man. Like, you're looking at this offense now, and I remember week one against the Chiefs, and I tweeted, I could really use Jamal right now because these receivers are not getting much separation outside of St. Brown.
Right.
And so you look ahead now, and you see Jamal doing his thing. You see St. Brown doing his thing. You see LaPorta doing his thing. You see Josh Reynolds doing his thing. You see Jahmyr Gibbs working his way back. This will be the first time that they have all those guys
all of them together.
You know, on the field together. And so you're kind of looking like Thanos collecting Infinity Stones, you know, and like they all fit together. And that's the thing. And I think.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like that's, you can question some of Jamal's maturity and, you know, the drops or whatever, but his place in this offense is quite obvious, quite clear. He's going to draw a couple defenders downfield. He's going to create stuff over the middle for these other guys. They're going to get Gibbs involved in the passing game. Like, when these guys are all, you know, seasoned and they're all working in rhythm with this offense, it's going to be pretty damn hard to stop. It already is. That's a scary thing. Like, they're at fourth in the league in scoring and third in yards per game. And they're still working in some of their young, talented speedsters. So when those guys are all comfortable in this league, it could be really scary.
Yeah, I mean, yes, you can't recreate what he gives you offensively. You just can't. I mean, there's just no other. There's very few guys, and that you could see it on the touchdown. Like, the second level speed is still there after all the setbacks and the time off and everything else. Like, it's still there. He cooked that guy. Like, that guy had no chance. That was ridiculous. Like, he cooked him, he beat that guy by, and that's why it's like, well, if the ball comes out weird, it doesn't matter because, like, he still has time to go back. And people ask me that a lot. They're like, was there a lot of passes at Bama where Jameson had to adjust to the ball? Yes, because, like, he outruns the ball a lot. Like, and he played with Bryce Young, so there were a lot that he didn't have to. But, yes, there's a lot that he would outrun the everything. He'd outrun the whole route off the screen. Where the hell did he go? You know, kind of thing. And it's like it's an adjustment for him and for the quarterback. But the more he is trusted to go in there and be part of what they're doing, I got to think the better it will be. And I don't know if that will mean, you know, he has 1,000 yards in the second half of the season and 12 touchdowns, but I think it could help you create stuff for other people. And right now, from where I'm sitting, that's a start, and you take it. Because from what it was 2 weeks ago, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Not great. So you'll take it, because you got to start somewhere. And finally felt like that was it. Finally felt like that was the start, right? Not a gimmick. Yep. Nothing stupid. It came within the offense, and it just is what it is, you know.
Jamal has oh shit speed. And
what
I mean by that is,
yes,
I played cornerback when you know, my young football career, and there were times receivers would run right by me, and then you turn around and you're like, oh shit, and all you see is their back.
Right.
And that's Jamal.
Like, you're never catching
him. NFL defensive backs. He's running right by them. They're seeing him do that, and they're going, oh shit, and they're trying to catch up.
And you can see them. Yes, it's like that. We used to make fun of Okuda all the time for it. But it's like when you get behind somebody and they just empty their tank running, right?
Yes.
Where it's full body sprint and their hands are all out and shit, and they're like, oh, and Jameson is just, you know, like casually running. That's the difference.
Just long strides down the field.
It's,
like,
it's a very real thing, and there's a lot more, obviously, they could do with him, but you got to start somewhere. And it felt like that was a good start. Okay, defensively, speaking of good starts, this is one that really hasn't gotten enough love here or talk or whatever from anybody, be it national or probably even local, because everyone's rightly so fixated on how good the offense has been and the team in general. But the defense, Colton, and I don't really even have one piece of it. It's the whole thing. Not just the way the guys are playing on the field, not just the way that the depth is showing up, but I think this is the best stretch that Aaron Glenn has certainly had. And it's not the only good stretch that Aaron Glenn has had, but for the first time in the 3 years here, he should be getting a chance to shine, and everybody should be seeing. He's a good coach. I think somebody might have said it on the broadcast either this week or last week, and it was 100% correct, and that Campbell sort of like made the decision, I'm going to ride it out because I know how hard it's going to be defensively for us. I'm going to ride it out with Aaron Glenn. I don't care. I'll take all the heat on offense and everything else because I know how good a coach he is, right? And I think now, are we not starting to see some of that? They've got injuries everywhere, and they're still holding up, and they're still doing things the way that, you know, more than we expected probably this year, to be honest.
Yeah, no, they really are. you know, I'm thinking back to last year around this time where people were like, fire Aaron Glenn.
Right,
and
yeah.
we had to kind of talk people off
year
the
ledge. Year one, they did that too, by the way.
Yeah. And like, I don't know, man. It's like they were building this thing slowly. They knew that this would take time. Around this time a year ago, they didn't have key pieces like John Kaminsky. He was hurt. You know, mm-hmm. guys like Pascal were hurt. You know, I'm looking around the defense. I'm like, they don't, you know, Tracy Walker went down. Their cornerbacks weren't great. Like, he didn't have, like, the talent that he needed to kind of run his system. And yet people were calling for his job. And right. I'm like, it's kind of hard to do your job when you don't have the proper tools to do your job. You know, and I know people like to say, oh, a good DC can make do with what he has. That's not always the case, man. The NFL is a talented league, and, like, these offenses are going to come after you if you don't have, you know, some dudes, you know, some actual right. dudes. And they've got some guys now that are helping this defense look like one of the better ones in the NFL. And I think that's a testament to Glenn and, you know, Campbell's patience in him and saying, you know what, you're my guy. Like, I trust you with my life. You're the one that's going to get this defense
going.
Oh, yeah,
going. Right, no question, yeah.
And so I look at them now, and I think they're – seventh in yards allowed or ninth in scoring. Like, they're top 10 across the board, basically. Might have the number one rushing defense right now, number one and number two, which is a far cry from last year when they were, like, 30th. Like, the year-over-year improvement is it's still baffling to me. I said this to Chris last week. Like, I thought they would be middle of the pack. I thought that would be, like, a really good improvement if you can get to, like, you know, the 15 to 18 range in the NFL. They're top 10 in yards and scoring. Like, mm-hmm. and they're doing this without, like, Brian Branch hasn't played recently. You know, Pascal and some of these young dudes haven't played.
Mosley hasn't played all year.
He played for two snaps, which is super unfortunate.
Right.
CJ, and so yeah. CJ Gardner-Johnson, yeah. Like, you can just go around and, like, they're missing guys that were supposed to help. And they're actually getting it done without those guys now. So I think that's super impressive, what he's been able to do with his defense, how he's been able to keep them along. You know, going on the road and only allowing 6 points is just crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, like, credit to Aaron Glenn. Like, he's taken a lot of shit over the years, here he is and standing tall and, you know, got a good defense and is probably going to get some head coaching looks as a result this offseason.
Oh, you absolutely will. I mean, obviously all things have to hold up, right? You know, you have to keep doing this. But I think for a couple of reasons here, number one, a couple of things I should say. Number one, Dan Campbell and Aaron Glenn are, like, day one dudes. They're, like, as close to brothers as non-sibling people can get, I think. And so anybody who thought that that was ever possible was fooling themselves. Campbell, the building would have had to burn to the ground or something, you know.
But we had questions about that.
For that to happen. Like, I mean, it's just, Campbell would have been like, fire me. I'm not doing it. Like, that's how close they are, and that's how much they believe in each other. And I would add to that, as part two of this, is, like, his reputation inside of football, inside the NFL, Aaron Glenn's reputation is awesome. And when he took the Lions defensive coordinator job, I was surprised. A lot of people were surprised. It spoke to how close he and Dan Campbell are. And I think that's what's, I didn't know that, you know, I don't know. But I think that's because he would have had chances to go elsewhere. And I think he was kind of on track if he had stuck in New Orleans, maybe to be the head coach there. Who knows, right? So I think that, like, his reputation takes a hit when he comes here because you're saddled with a gutted roster. And defense is already harder to do anything with anyway. And the only thing they had that was redeemable on the roster was the offensive line. So you're going to build around the offense. That's what they did. And he was his most important hire, he being Aaron Glenn, because Campbell tells him, you're going to have to eat all the shit for the first 2 years, probably, maybe longer. When they took the job, it was probably like, you're going to have to eat the shit for 3 years, I bet, until we're even ready to do this. But I know you're going to be fine, and it won't matter, because you can get anybody to play for you. And that is why he is who he is. And I think that that's the cool part that's coming through. Like, he can scheme and do things with anybody. I think that's, you know, if you're a coordinator at that level, you're fine with all that. I don't get into the nitpicky stuff about any of that. I think his schemes are fine. I think the games he's called this year have been good across the board. I haven't had too many nitpicks on that. They haven't played too many, you know, crazy awesome offenses yet, I guess. But whatever. He's a good coach schematically. But the best part about him and why he's going to be a head coach is that he can get every guy on the team, just like Campbell. He gets every guy on the team to buy in and every coach under him to buy in, like he trusts them with his with their life or whatever. Like, it's vice versa. There's not many guys that pull that off, and he is definitely one of them. So I think it's cool that some of this is shining through here, because I've been around a lot of coaches over the years, And a lot of them that were former players, and not all of them can do that. There's some that can. Most of them are former players, but not all of them have that like alpha leadership gene. And Aaron Glenn has it, man. Like it's all there because they have played well in years past with nothing on the roster, right? And now you see what they're doing with a little bit better, even though it's not perfect.
Yeah, Aaron Glenn's a guy that can light into you if you're, you know, not playing well. He's a guy that can comfort you and give you the reassurance that you need. He has this sort of – he can teach you the game and what he's learned, you know, with his career. And then he can scheme a defense. Like, it's hard not to think of him as, like, a future head coach or head coach in waiting, you know, like one of those situations. Like, he is – that feels like his trajectory at this point. Like, Dan lets him lead meetings and just 100%. Speak to the team. Like, we saw in Hard Knocks, the way that he kind of commands – a meeting room. He can do that too. So, like, for me, it wasn't really a question of, you know, if he can get there. It was just sort of when, how, you know, what would the pieces look like? How long would it take to kind of get that collection of talent around him that he needed to kind of make this thing work? And he has that now. Those young guys, we saw it in the second half of last year, the young guys that they drafted were finally infiltrating the defense and it looked like some of the better players in the team. And here they are again this year, kind of starring and, you know, helping contribute to these wins. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard not to think of the job that Aaron Glenn's done with this defense. Like, he's really turned it around. Yeah. And I'll add this, because I wrote about him earlier this week. Alex Anzalone.
Oh, yes. Like, man, he's been good.
It's not just like – it's like the evaluation. Like, the Lions and Campbell and
– you're right. Holmes, you're 100% top, right. I know what you're saying.
Their ability to, like, evaluate and stick to their own process and not worry about, like, what anyone says. Like, Campbell didn't worry about – Glenn taking heat. You know, a lot of people didn't want Alex Anzalone anymore on this team. You know, they wanted an upgrade in free agency. They brought him back on a 3-year, $18.75 million deal. A lot of people were upset with that, you know. I remember that at the time. He's playing the best football of his career.
Absolutely.
And he's doing it in Glenn's defense. You know, those guys came over from New Orleans together.
Yeah, they know each other really
I think
well.
That – They do, yeah. So I look at, you know, he's kind of leading this Glenn defense. Like, Glenn finally has his guys around him. I think those two have been crucial to the turnaround and what we've seen defensively.
Yeah, and I mean, Alex was a guy, too, that I remember we talked to Chris and I did the films thing with Aaron when they came in, and he'd said right away, he was like, people aren't high on him, Anzalone, because he had a shoulder injury coming out of college, and he's not a great take-on guy. But if you put him in the right spots, if he's healthy, he's a really good player between the tackles. You just got to get him healthy. And so I'm wondering, maybe they think he's healthy. Maybe that's a big part of it. He looks healthy to me. But before we move on to the last part here, because I know you got to go to the locker room, Aaron Glenn is going to be a head coach sooner than later. Cough, Dallas Cowboys. Cough, cough. That would be fun. Anyway, moving forward to our final segment here, I did want to talk Colton because it is trade deadline season, and for the first time in like everyone's life, the Lions are possibly, I can't even say it without laughing, possibly a buyer here at the deadline. Like I had to do like a quadruple take when I read Mike Jones and Jeff Howe did a story on all the trades they'd like to see here at the Athletic today, and one of them was the Lions getting Pat Surtain, and it was just like, that, you know, hey, I was like, well, I mean, obviously the stuff that Mike, who knows about that, but I was like, hey, something like that even being possible isn't something I've thought about for the Lions in forever. So what are your thoughts on the deadline here, and what would you like to see, if anything?
Yeah, I mean, the Lions, like, are positioned to be buyers. You know, that's just kind of clear to see. Like, they are 5-1, tied for the best record in the NFL. Deadline's a few weeks away. Like, they should be a buyer. They should look to add to this core, clean up some weaknesses. Not that they have a ton, but, you know, you can always strengthen your roster a little bit. So I did see that piece with Mike and Jeff.
Yeah.
And they did mention Surtain, and that's been a player that I've been asked about a ton the last couple of weeks because people think the Broncos are ready to have a fire sale here. not going
to
Sean Payton.
Yeah, I can't imagine they wouldn't.
Yeah, and so, yeah, I mean, the Surtain stuff is interesting. If they do move him, obviously, like, there will be a bunch of teams lining up to get him.
Oh, he's awesome.
And he would make sense for the Lions just because, obviously, Mosley was supposed to be a guy here, got hurt, he's out for the season. So your two starting corners, you feel pretty good about, I think, with Jerry and Cam Sutton. But your depth there is not super strong. Like, you have Will Harris who can play on the outside if needed, but they kind of like him more in the nickel spot. You know, you have Stephen Gilmore, but he's like an undrafted free agent rookie, so I don't know how much you can really trust him there.
Yeah, right.
You know, just, I guess, not a ton of options at outside corner. So if they do make him available, I would pick up the phone if I were Brad and see what it would take. Now, I think it's going to take more than what our guys, you know, asked. I think Mike threw that out there.
He's at second and a fourth.
Broncos trade cornerback Patrick Surtain to the Lions for a 2024 second and a 2025 third round pick. Second, so I guess multiple picks. Yeah. I don't know if that gets it done for one of the best corners in the league who's, like, still on his rookie contract.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, like, those are deals you can start to think about, I think, if you're the Lions and you're looking to, you know, bolster your roster for, a run down the stretch, you know. Why not? I think you're in position for it. You've kind of proven yourself on the field, so maybe take some swings.
Right, and that would be the place to do it, corner. I mean, it really would. Yep. Anywhere else, that would be the one spot that you would do it, I think. And that, frankly, like, because Surtain, it's going to cost a first to get him, I would think. And he is top.
Yeah,
he is a top tier. He's not Sauce, but he's right behind him in terms of the next. And he's really already there. You know, what is he? 24? He can't be. He cannot be 25 if he's barely 25. He's the type of guy, though. That I'm saying, long-winded way of getting here. If somebody asked for a first and they were like, it's the 26th pick overall for Patrick Surtain. Like, okay, cool, let's do it, because, like, I'm not getting a player at number 26 overall that's, you know what I mean, that's better than him, and it's a position of need. We're gonna sign him and we're gonna keep him here for, you know, like, so that is one that I would even consider maybe going a little bit more than I would be comfortable spending. I don't know if they're there, though. That's my question. I guess they're definitely a buyer, or the, you know, what we would consider a buyer, in that, you know, they should be interested in looking around. But I don't think they should be a careless buyer. And some teams should be careless buyers. Like, Philly should probably always be looking to just poach people because their roster just doesn't have – they draft so well, right? There's not a lot of – you have more wiggle room. I don't know if they're quite there with the wiggle room yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to get into a habit of, like, trading all your picks. You know, Brad came over from L.A. He saw that.
Yeah,
so
right.
He doesn't want to repeat that.
Yeah.
But I do kind of wonder, like, you know, historically, the Lions have, you know, haven't been buyers. Obviously, they haven't gotten to a point where they could be buyers yet under this regime. They're there now. But Brad is still kind of hesitant with some of these moves. Like, you know, he's smart about spending in free agency. He hasn't made a trade for a big name yet with the Lions like this. So, you know, we'll see. This would probably reveal a lot about kind of how he views the team and whether they're ready for that next step and ready to – you know, sell off some pieces, because we know he loves the draft. He's probably not going to be too too happy about trading some picks. But if he can get a player like Surtain or, you know, another guy here, you know, maybe this is the year where he kind of makes that trade happen. We'll see.
We shall see indeed. All right, well, we'll wrap it up for this week. Colton is going to be headed off to the locker room and then to Baltimore. Have you been to Baltimore before, Colton?
I have not.
Is this your first time?
I've known nothing about it other than the Wire.
That's true.
That'd be fun, though. I'm cool. I love exploring new cities.
Yeah, the harbor in Baltimore is actually awesome. Baltimore's a really cool, underrated town. Although, yes, there are probably some Wire, like, tourist spots of the Wire that you maybe don't want to go to. I don't know. Like, maybe some, but maybe not all. But in any event,
I'll check it out.
Colton will be there for Lions-Ravens. Did this game get flexed? This game, like the last one did? What's the time on this bad boy? I was all thrown off last week, I got to tell you, after my...
I know.
Procedure.
I don't think I like that.
I didn't either.
4:25?
No. I was like, I need the 1 o'clock, I think. But, you know, in any event.
This is 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock. Okay, we'll see. Thank God.
I don't think it'll get flexed at this point.
We're back to regular time slot here. So, Lions-Ravens on Sunday. This will be very interesting. Colton will be there to take it all in, of course. And then next week, we'll be back to break it all down. Colton, you got anything else for this week?
No, I'm all good.
All right, then I'll do it. Thanks for listening, everybody. Once again, for Colton, I'm Nick. Thanks for listening. Take care.